Now at Menards, save big money on everything for your next project. With the largest selection of concrete and mortar in stock, we have the right mix specially formulated for your project. View our entire selection of concrete and mortar mixes online or in-store and save big money. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Soccer Matters.
Quickshot score! The U.S. with Dempsey!
For Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro, remate de gol! Gol de oro! Gol de oro! Gol de Uribe!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. We roll on here tonight as the Houston Dynamo this weekend will be in action against Minnesota United. Get out to BBVA Stadium. The game will be airing on Channel 55, so you can join Eddie Robinson, myself, and Cindy Bourbano for the call of the game. Next interview is brought to you by Advantage BMW Midtown. Get down to Advantage BMW Midtown. Ask for Steven. You can ask also for Justin. They will take care of you. Sales, they'll put you in a vehicle, whether it's a lease or a buy. Advantage BMW Midtown, proud sponsors of Soccer Matters, and they bring us the one and only Fafa Pico. Fafa, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
All right, look, in times like this, I like to go to veterans over the years because these are not easy times. These are very tough times. And I know it's been tough on you, the players, the coaching staff, everybody. Before we get to your performance this year, which I'm looking forward to talking to you about, just take me into the morale, where you guys are mentally. And look, I get you got to protect the locker room, but I also know there are things that are reality, and fans know that too.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's not an easy moment for all of us, for any of us. We're aware of the situation. We know where we sit on the table. And it's not where we envision to be right now, especially as we started out the season well. And then a few ties went on and it just became a habitual thing. And it's unfortunate because we know a lot of the games we could have closed out better. We could have done better in them. And it's not reflective of our actual performances all around. But once you're not getting results, what's talked about is just the little things that you do wrong or the mishaps in games. But, you know, some of the balls go our way, some of the deflections go our way, or we don't make certain errors in certain key moments, or maybe we come into second half more awake. We don't lose these games or we don't tie a lot of these games, and we end up maybe getting 15 more points than we have right now, easily. But now we have to look at it game by game. We can't look too much into the next five games or into the next six games. We have to look forward to Saturday and perform Saturday and look to get 3 points on Saturday. And once we get that first win, we build off from there.
Fafa, do you still believe in the playoffs? It's going to be a tough hoe. You're going to have to win a lot of games.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing is that there's 14 games left. We're past that half mark. But at the same time, we have the players and we have the locker room. We have the belief to do what we have to do. It's not going to be easy. I'm not going to sit here and try to make it sound like an easy task. But at the same time, we know what we're capable of. And like I said, if we close out some of those games differently, if we're a bit more focused in key moments, we end up winning those games. So we definitely have confidence that we can get there. With 2-3 wins, we turn things around and we're back in where we have to be.
42 points still available. We're talking to Dynamo striker Fafa Pico, who drew the penalty, hit the penalty kick in the 2-2 draw with FC Dallas. You mentioned the start to the second half, and we've seen this year consistently, you know, not answering the bell and really putting yourself in difficult positions. And I just have to think here that, you know, coaches are always on the way out of the locker room saying, hey, let's get off to a good start. You guys are saying it amongst yourself. What do you think it is?
It could just be I honestly, I couldn't tell you fully. It can just be at this point, maybe certain moments of complacency or just comfort, you know, especially when we're up 1-0, or if people pay attention or if we look at it from the outside, a lot of the times we tie a game or we're winning a game, we kind of get comfortable instead of just putting teams away, you know, maybe just killing a game off or just booting a ball. Instead, maybe try to make that extra good looking pass or something that might, you know, not get us what we need. It's maybe more attractive, but ends up costing us in the end. So we just got to be a bit more brute and look to just close out games. And again, the same way we come out early in second half, sometimes dry, even if the coach gives us all the motivation we need, sometimes we come out flat. And then closing out games, those last 5-10 minutes of games are crucial. And at times we've given up games in those moments too.
Fafa, just take me into, you know, look, the reason I bring you on is because you're a longtime pro. You've been through it. You've seen a lot of things. You've had the ups and downs. You've got the experience. There's no question. Do you see it wearing on any of your teammates? And I don't want to hear names or anything, but can you see that? Can you feel that? And how do you pull yourself up out of that? You know, because you remain very motivated. How do you help your teammates along with that? But do you see that?
Yeah, I think it's normal at this point. Sometimes maybe we score and then we get scored and it's like, crap, here we go again kind of situation. But I think the only way to deal with that is just putting 100% and more than that, pouring out more than you have even in effort. And I think it's contagious across the board. If a few people are doing it, other guys will continue to do it. And it just becomes contagious throughout the team. And even coming in and during the week and working hard as a group, you know, checking on each other, having a good group. I think all these things are necessary for these moments that we're going through right now to keep the motivation and keep the unity and the peace in the locker room so that we don't beat up ourselves completely to the point where we get discouraged, because it's obvious we're having a lot of outside noise that's negative and we don't want to, you know, bring that to where we are. We have to fight for each other. The good thing is we have a great locker room and a great group of guys that's helping. And I think that's going to help us over this stretch of next 14 games.
All right. I know we only have 1 minute left. I want to go to a singular play though, because I love that touch you made after that long diagonal ball and then earning the penalty. That to me was a spectacular moment. Take me through that a little bit.
No, it was a great diag from Darwin Seren. And I knew the defender was going to kind of try to play with it. So, you know, try to float in between. And once I realized he was going to try to make the play, the only thing I had left was just focus on the touch forward and try to get behind the defense. I realized later on I had Coco open, but at that point I'd already dribbled. And I said, if I could split the turn again, I'll get a shot off and try to roof it first post. But once I saw the second guy come and hit me, I was going to get a draw penalty. So I just have to continue to make plays like that. That's the FAF I know, and that's the FAF I expect to perform. And I want to continue in that way to help my team in every way I can.
We look forward to watching you against Minnesota. Fafa Pico has 6 goals, 3 for 3 on penalty kicks. So I know who's taking our next penalty if we get one on Saturday. Thank you very much for coming on the show tonight, Fafa. Best of luck, and thank you for being open and honest about the situation.
Thank you for having me, Glenn. Appreciate it.
All right, that's Fafa Pico, Houston Dynamo. They'll take on Minnesota this weekend. We'll take a break. It's all brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
You know, in MLS, this is around the time when the teams start to get hot. At the moment, we've still played more away games than home games, and that's a little bit of a disadvantage for us. Once we get these three home games, I really believe we can get back in. And let's not forget, we have Tyler Passer, who's not who's still not available to us, and he's the one that scores probably the most goals per minute. We need to have him on the field. We also signed Corey Baird, who has a lot of quality. You know, he can do the things Griff is doing, but then he can score as well. So, you know, I think with those two guys back, and I'm hoping that they'll be back for next week.
Soccer Matters rolls on here tonight. A reminder, the Dynamo will take on Minnesota United this Saturday at BBVA Stadium. We all know the importance of that game. This segment is brought to you by FM Kitchen and Bar. FM Kitchen and Bar has two locations, one in the Montrose area next to Velvet Taco. That is the new one. And one which is north of Washington on Shepherd. FM Kitchen and Bar, great beer garden outside. You can bring your dog, your family, craft cocktails, the freshest of food. It's one of my go-tos. Head over there, FM Kitchen and Bar. And with that, we bring in Houston Dynamo attacker Griffin Dorsey joining us now. Griffin, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right, so we're going to fish here and not cut bait, because we do know it's been tough times here trying to get this result. And I guess the first thing I would say to you as a professional soccer player, how tough has this been to come close to getting results, but just not be able to get over the hump and get the full 3 points?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think just in the tone of your voice and the way you phrase the question, it's very obvious that everyone's struggling to get the result. The whole team is, and we're all just fighting for it. We're working hard and we're doing everything that we possibly can to try to figure out how to turn the tables. And I think this is a league of momentum. And if we can get one rolling, then we feel very confident that we can get multiple.
Griffin, you've provided some very good minutes for the Dynamo. You've brought some penetration. You've stepped in wonderfully here. It's your most extended run in Major League Soccer, I believe, minutes-wise. Was it a tough situation to get dropped into when it comes to a starting role now, based on everything that's been going on? And you know, as a player, it is kind of a unique position to have to come into a team and be expected to produce right away.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, for any professional athlete, it's just important to come in and try to make a difference and do everything in your power to make a difference. So I think when you say, you know, it's a tough situation or a hard situation, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, because as a professional athlete, your job is to make a difference no matter what position you're in. So I think for me, as a guy who in Toronto didn't have much of a stint in minutes played, coming to Houston and getting those minutes and trying to take advantage of those minutes was the only thing that was on my mind. And yeah.
Griffin Dorsey joining us here on ESPN 97.5 Soccer Matters. We appreciate it. Has come into the Dynamo, has produced a ton of crosses for the Dynamo, 7 appearances, 5 starts, looking for that first assist, a number of key passes as well. You know, I looked at you in this last game and I just said, you know, the amount of running you did, the amount of penetration, you got to be reaching a point now where you just want to get that delivery in and see the final product, I would think.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's been, as you said, it's been a long stint of minutes, and to not have an assist or a goal or any form of results that show up on the score sheet can be tough. But I think, you know, if you look at the stats and that's the way you analyze the game, I think that there are some positives that I can take away from that. And ultimately, I just have to keep rolling with the positives, and eventually things will start happening. But you are correct. I need to start finding ways to get assists and goals.
Well, it's not like you're not penetrating. You're making things happen. You're turning defenses. Where did that ability and desire to take people on come from? Come at the youth level at Indiana, where you played it with the Hoosiers? I mean, where did that kind of come from? Has that always been inherent with your game?
Yeah, I think I would always kind of look at myself as an attacking-minded player, whether I'm playing right back or right winger. Yeah, from a young age, I've always kind of wanted to make a difference in front of the opposing team's net. And yeah, I think it would stem from my childhood you know, I grew up always scoring goals and always wanting to score goals. So that definitely is where it comes from. And then obviously at Indiana, it was the same way. I was brought to that Hoosier team to make a difference in the final third.
Well, that you did. Griffin Dorsey joining us here. Tell me a little bit about playing at Indiana and such a storied program under Todd Yeagley and what it was like there. I had the opportunity to call some of your games, I think one of the national championship games as well. And we were very much aware of who Griffin Dorsey was. So just talk about what that program meant to you, your career, your development.
Yeah. Indiana University for anyone who goes there, especially the men's soccer players. It's a very storied place. It's a very special place. And I think the biggest thing that they harp on at Indiana University, especially in the men's soccer department, is family. And even since leaving there, I feel like I am still part of that family, you know, win, lose, or draw. Obviously, at the end of my freshman year, I had, you know, a national championship game where I made a mistake and we lost, the national championship game to Stanford in double overtime. But there was never a time in my Indiana career where I felt like I wasn't part of a family. And even now when I've been away from Indiana for close to 3 years, I still feel that way. So it's very special and it will always have a place in my heart.
He's Griffin Dorsey joining us here. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, again, ahead of Minnesota United coming to town on Saturday. HoustonDynamo.com for tickets. Minnesota United comes in with Emmanuel Reynoso and others. Before we get to Minnesota United, Griffin, just, you know, explain, because I think it's important for people to know the levels you've been at. You know, when you're playing at Indiana as an NCAA men's soccer team, you're playing at one of the top programs historically in the country. Some would claim it is the top. Then you get to Toronto, you're a high draft choice. It's all about, wow, here we are now. We're at the next level. You really don't get much of an opportunity there. Just take us a little bit through the ups and downs of a professional soccer player, because I'm not sure everybody always, that kind of that side of the life doesn't necessarily always resonate.
Yeah, no, I think when you get drafted, I think it's hard for people to understand, even, you know, trying to explain it to some of my family members. It's a very special moment, but it's also a moment where you're taking a big step into the real world. I think, you know, university soccer is great and it's a great stepping stone. But the comparisons are very, very small for university to professional athletics. And for me, once I got drafted, it was a very positive time. But, you know, I stepped into a Toronto FC team that was very special. And when you're a star your entire life and you play every minute of every game and then you find yourself not playing a single minute, it can be very brutal mentally. And, you know, you're moving out of a house of five with some of your best friends in college to an apartment by yourself. And, you know, it's a lot of time and space by yourself where you got to figure out how to go about living life. And I think for me, that was the biggest change was, you know, how do I deal with not playing and not being the star of the team? Because when you're that way from such a young age, it can be hard to deal with the humility of not finding the field as much.
Griffin Dorsey joining us. How did you deal with that? Did it accelerate your maturity as a player? Did it accelerate, you know, your maturity as a human?
Yeah, no, I think for a while, I don't think I internalized it very well. But as time went on, it definitely turned the tables into something that became much more of a matured mindset where, you know, you kind of have to come to a realization with yourself that this isn't going to be an easy thing. And it's something that you're going to have to work for. And those were the decisions I had to make in my head. And, And when you make those decisions, you get, you know, there are things you have to sacrifice and things you have to do on the field and off the field to fight and claw for every opportunity you can get.
Now, Tab Ramos was obviously very aware with you, aware of you with youth national teams. And when you got the opportunity to come to Houston and compete for a contract, how did that feel?
Yeah. And, you know, it felt great to have somebody who I had played for before and having a familiar face around. But ultimately, it's an MLS environment. And for me, everything was about, once again, fighting for that opportunity, and having Tab by my side definitely helped. But, you know, Tab's there for his job as well, and he wasn't going to give anything to me easy. And ultimately, it was just about fighting for an opportunity.
Well, obviously, you've earned it now. You've been one of the better Dynamo players, in our humble opinion, from the outside.
Thank you.
I watched you in the press conference after the game. I thought you handled that very, very professionally, very real, much like this interview, because there is the personal satisfaction with you getting minutes, contributing, feeling a big part of it. And the other part of it is, you know, that you didn't have anything to do with was past history and how everything's kind of accumulated to a fan base. So, this is a bit of a character test, not only for you, but I think the whole group and the whole organization. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I would say that's fair to say.
Minnesota United coming in. What is it about Minnesota United you guys are thinking about at this point?
Yeah, I think it's always important to look at an opponent. But right now, I think for us as a team and as an organization, it's about just looking at ourselves. There are a few things, obviously, with Minnesota United that you have to be focused on, with, you know, an attacking core of Minnesota United that's very strong. We have to be sound defensively, but I think ultimately our mindset is going in with this is about us, and this is 100% about us competing and fighting for a win. And they're coming to the Houston Heat. They've got to deal with that. And I think that that's a big, strong fighting point for us as a team, where we believe that we can suffer harder than the team in front of us. And, you know, put tactics aside, we're going to go out there and try to outwork everybody on Minnesota United.
Griffin, I had spoken to Tab, and he said, you know, there could be a potential one day that you're turned into an outside back in Major League Soccer. Is that something you've ever done before? Is that something you would entertain and be interested in? I mean, I would think you would, because you want to be on the field regardless, but would you be comfortable doing that?
Yeah. So Toronto FC was my first introduction to outside back. Greg Vanney, now coaching LAFC, or not LAFC, LA Galaxy, sorry. He told me about halfway through my rookie year in the league in 2019 that he doesn't see me as a winger, and he sees me as an outside back. So I've actually played more outside back in the league in terms of training sessions than I probably have at winger. It's something I feel very comfortable with, and something that I definitely foresee in my future. But right now it's all about, you know, whatever the team needs and wherever I can find areas on the field to, to do my job.
Griffin, have you, you know, in your professional career, have you leaned on Todd Yeagley or any of the other Indiana guys? You know, do you give them a phone call at times? You know, what's your support system like there?
Yeah, I think, you know, Todd Yeagley is definitely a guy I've reached out to multiple times throughout my career. Danny O'Rourke and Kevin Robeson are other coaches that I've leaned on when I've needed that support. And then also it's the family aspect of having players in the league who, you know, or part of your teams or around your teams that have gone to Indiana University. Like, Drew Moore and Eric Zavaleta in Toronto and guys like that, that, you know, before you even meet them, they're supporting you because of that family, the Indiana family aspect.
It's fantastic. The Hoosier family. Griffin, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. And best of luck against Minnesota United this weekend. And again, thank you for sharing some time with us.
Yeah, thank you so much, Glenn.
All right, that's Griffin Dorsey, Indiana, now Houston Dynamo. Expect to see him against Minnesota United this weekend. We'll take a break. It's brought to you by Danish Inspirations Contemporary Furniture. You know Jan Christensen. It's modern contemporary furniture. It's Danish Inspirations. We'll take a break. We have more to come. Head of screens and center 42.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Lukaku holds it up well. Kovacic, lovely ball. Plenty of space here for Reece James. Flag stays down. Lukaku! Romelu Lukaku scores his first senior goal for Chelsea in his second debut.
All right, final segment of the night here on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, and we're going to go out in big style here tonight. Before we get to our interview, we just got to remind you, the show is presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's 713-322-HURT, 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. It's DaspitLaw.com. Nobody likes accidents. Nobody wants to get in them. You can get into situations where you're very nervy, but you do need representation. Car, boat, motorcycle, might work at a refinery. It is DaspitLaw.com. Great friend of the show, former Newcastle United defender. You catch him on Fox. He is Warren Barton. He joins us now. Warren, how are you?
I'm very good, my friend. Nice to speak to you.
Great to have you back on the show as usual. I have to take you right into your former club, Newcastle United, their first two matches. What's changed?
Not a lot, to be honest with you. You know, they started off the season last year pretty poorly. Not too many subs. The boy from Arsenal, obviously, they went and bought him. But it's going to be a grind. It's going to be a tough season. The manager's still there. The owner's still there. They finished off the season once the pressure was off pretty well and finished what everybody seems to be is a good mid-table for Newcastle. But it's a shadow of the team that I represented. It's a shadow of the optimism that it had. And it's going to be a tough season because, you know, you've only got to look at the likes of Arsenal that have been the biggest spenders. They're going to push back up there. And, you know, as for Newcastle, they've just got to try and keep hold of their players fit enough and obviously just try and win as many games as possible. But by the sounds of my voice, I think you can tell I'm not too optimistic, Glenn, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I figured I'd get that question out of the way right off the start here. It's Warren Barton, former Newcastle United defender. How about your thoughts on Manchester United? 1-1 draw with Southampton after coming back with that big, very emotional win over Leeds. I think after that first game, everybody feeling very excited about new signings, Varane coming to town. What do you think that kind of draw did to them? That temper everything?
I think it was a reality check. And I was listening to the guys out in the UK, Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher. And I think Jamie said a really interesting point as well, because Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is obviously a Manchester United legend. He's a coach that's getting more and more experience going forward. But that squad of players and the money that they spent in recent times, and I know Gary Neville mentioned the likes of Mourinho and Louis van Gaal. Yes, they're top-class managers in their prime, but when they went to Manchester United, they wasn't in their prime. They'd finished that. So I think Jamie was right. If you put Klopp in charge of that squad, if you put Pep, Thomas Tuchel, in charge of that squad of players, I think you'd be realistic saying they can win the league. I think they can with this squad of players. but I'm still not convinced with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer if he's that driving force and leadership and has that championship know-how as a coach to win it. I think they've made phenomenal signings. I don't think they're done yet. I mean, I think if they went and got Harry Kane, then I think we're really talking business. But they've got some wonderful players, Rashford to come back. I think they'll be there or thereabouts, Glenn, but I don't think they've got the mentality, and whether that's from the coaching staff or as belief from the coaching staff and the players, to have that toughness to go and win it. I still think the benchmark would be Man City. Chelsea will obviously be there or thereabouts. And I think Liverpool, you know, a lot of their key players are signing long-term deals. But I do like Man United. I think they, you know, the Premier League is a better league when they're doing well. And I think they will be challenging. There's just a but. And now whether that's the coach or that belief, as I've mentioned, you know, but they will be in the mix, definitely.
He's former Newcastle United defender Warren Barton. So I want to take you back to something you said that was very interesting there, that Neville said that Mourinho and Louis van Gaal were managers that were out of their prime. How do managers that successful go out of their prime? Is that lack of modernization of their thought process, tactics? What is that?
Yeah, I think it's, and from my experience, Glenn, it's been managers that are setting their blueprint. And someone like Sir Alex Ferguson, Klopp, the game evolves, it changes. You know, the players change, their mindset changes, the media changes, the rules of the game change. But I think when you speak about Mourinho, he has not changed in a decade. And he will turn around and say, I've won trophies at Man United, I got them into the Champions League. But there's a fine line between competing and winning. And I know that better than anybody. Take me back to 95, 96, when I was trying to win the Premier League. And there's a fine line. And I think Mourinho is one of them that hasn't adapted to new players. You know, how many times you hear of him falling out with players and agents. And you have to be mindful of the younger players and how they, what makes them tick, what makes them go forward. And Louis van Gaal was a, you know, a Dutch legend. And it was the Dutch way or no way. And a little bit, if it's not Dutch, it's not much. And that didn't fall too well in the Premier League. So that's where I think Jamie Carragher and myself are saying, look, okay, you had world-class managers, but they wasn't in their prime. The game had moved on and they hadn't moved on with it. They're saying, I'm not saying that they, you know, they're not good managers, but you look wherever they've gone now, they haven't implemented the new ideas, the new tactics, the new systems. You always have a foundation as a coach, even myself coaching academy kids. But you have to learn, and you have to learn with the personnel that you're coaching with and playing with, what makes players tick, what system may suit the personnel that you have. Mourinho and Louis van Gaal, they had their system and they was going to play it, whether Rashford was part of it, whether Smalling was part of it, whoever was part of it, they were just going to play their system. And it maybe didn't suit the personnel or the personalities of the players they had. So I think that's where I'm coming from and Jamie Carragher. Gary will always look after Ollie and Man United. He's a legend there and he's a good friend of the coach. But I think if he sits back and looks and saying, well, yeah, there is a doubt there. But you know, hopefully Ollie proves us wrong, because I said Man United, it's a better Premier League when United are competing for the title.
So you know, you look at Mourinho and you go, how autocratic the guy is and how the times have changed, right? And the coach can't necessarily rule as much with a straight iron fist as once before, right? Because if you look at these young guys coming into the game, they're very different. Technology, their interests are different. There's a lot going on there. Then why do these boards of directors continue to hire guys, especially in Mourinho's case, because he's been a failure at three straight clubs now, pretty much. And he's left with a bad dressing room.
Yeah, I think in Italy that they would tolerate maybe his style of football, because he obviously won the Champions League and won the treble with Inter Milan. Roma, with all due respect, they needed him because they were sort of drifting into a mediocre team like an AC Milan. Where in my time when I played, Roma and AC Milan was legendary clubs and had top-class players, but that sort of faded away, Glenn. So maybe it suited both to have a bit of interest about Roma now, having Mourinho there. And also the league and the system suits what Mourinho can do. He can be very defensive-minded when he needs to, because the Italian mentality, that they love that defensive mind. Not always, because, again, in Italy, the game has changed. But
yeah,
he'd run out of clubs in England. you know, top mm-hmm. clubs. That he'd, so he was never going to manage Southampton or go to Norwich. So he was obviously looking abroad, and he left Italy on very, very high notes.
So I'm saying, as I listen to you, Warren, we're talking to Warren Barton, Roma made a signing in some ways that was a PR move to a large degree because of his high profile nature. Okay, his tactics can fit Italy, although I see an ever-changing Italy. I see Italy becoming a more open footballing league in the future.
As yeah, no doubt.
Kind of now.
Yeah, you look at what Mancini did when he was at Man City. Here's a coach that has evolved. You know, at Man City, he played a certain way. He's gone there, and when they won the Euros, they was the best team from start to finish. You know, England had a good run, and, you know, the Germans wasn't what we thought, and Spain and France, whatever, but the Italian football and Italian mindset, they had to reboot. You know, they didn't qualify for a major, major tournament, which has never been heard of. And they rebooted and went forward, and Mancini done a wonderful job, and the players have adapted to that. So you're right, Glenn, you know, watching Italian football now is a little bit different to maybe what it was in the, you know, 10 years ago. I think you've got some very, very exciting young players.
Yep. Warren Barton joining us here. Let's keep the discussion going. Arsenal and Mikel Arteta. I think there's a lot of people that would pull for him. Obviously Arsenal fans, but you know, how much of a leash does he have now? It seems like the pressure's on already after two rounds of Premier League play. What do you think?
I think some Arsenal fans have had enough of him. I think he talks a good game. He comes across as very articulate, and obviously with Pep's understanding of what he's done. But he's not dealing with the players that he had at Man City. I mean, you look at the money that they spent, you know, with White at the back, £50 million. He can't do a lot about the price tag. But what you can do is obviously invest that wisely into players. Now, if they're saying about White's going to be one for the future, Arsenal and Arteta really haven't got, I wouldn't think, for the future. They got to be hitting the ground running. And their performance against Brentford, I mean, my oldest son's an Arsenal fan, and you know, he walked out the room after the first 45 minutes on that Friday, threw his shirt on the floor. He was devastated because it was the same old Arsenal. You know, they looked weak. They looked like they was vulnerable. You're looking at a team that's got young players with good potential, great potential with some of them, but they've got no leaders. They've got no one in there that can take that team forward. And if Xhaka's your leader, and I think he had a really good Euro, but he's not the one that can take that into the Premier League. Chelsea's different because Chelsea, as I said, they're going to be one of the favourites. And Lukaku and handful. In second half, there was a little bit more. But the problem is with Arsenal, when I played against Arsenal, Glenn, there wasn't a weakness. That they was athletic. They was top-class players. I mean, I know I'm going back 10, 15 years ago, but there was no real weakness. You couldn't. Now there's a vulnerability about them. There's a weakness. Tactically, you can outplay them. They're trying to play out from the back. So Arteta, I would think, has got 10 games. I would think he's got 10 games. Now, whether that changes with the ownership, because a little bit like Mike Ashley with Steve Bruce, Arteta and Steve Bruce take all the flak. The owners are never really there, so you don't see them. They're the two that are taking the flak. So the owners are probably thinking, you lot deal with it. I'll just keep counting my money when we stay in the Premier League. And that's maybe what is okay for the ownerships of Arsenal Football Club. Going back to the Arsenal fans that I know, and one of them's my son, is they want to be challenging. They want to be, you know, competing. And they look a million miles away, even with the new players, even with the fresh start that they're having. But Arteta, as I said, he talks a good game. And sometimes, Glenn, you've had it in the past with Brian Kidd, who was an excellent assistant coach. Steve McLaren, another one, a good assistant coach. When they become a first team manager, it's totally different. It is totally different that you can do that. And even though the game has changed and evolved, sometimes you're just an assistant coach, and there's nothing wrong with that, or a first team coach. And maybe Arteta may fall under that umbrella, but because at the moment, the club and the situation looks too much for him. He's going to keep fighting. He's going to keep going. He's going to keep saying the right things. But results matter. And they've lost, you know, 2-0, 2-0, and never looked like actually getting into the game.
Warren, and those Arsenal teams you played against, I mean, you know it better than most. They had an incredible mental strength.
Yeah, they, as I said, you couldn't fault them in any way. Tactically, they was brilliant. Individually, they was brilliant. Henri, Bergkamp, you know, Perez. It goes on and on and on. But they had still, you know, you see him every week, you know, Lee Dixon, as much as he looks like a nice guy, he was a tough player. And Nigel and, you know, Steve Bould and Colatore, the list goes on and on. Laurent at the back, there was Ashley Cole when he broke in, you know, there was although there was excellent players, they had a little bit of toughness about them, a little bit of steel to go in and win trophies. And that's why they did it. None of these Arsenal players, with all due respect, look like that.
Talking to Warren Barton here, former Newcastle United defender. You catch him on Fox. All right. Premier League not going to release players for travel to the so-called, quote, red list countries due to the concern of the pandemic. Now, this is interesting because international windows are coming up. We're already here in Liverpool's not letting Mo Salah go. This could affect World Cup qualifying in a big way with all the Argentines, the Brazilians, guys like Alisson, Firmino. This is a big, big deal for World Cup qualifying.
It's huge, Glenn, for the game. But the bigger picture is the pandemic. I mean, in our lifetime, my friend, I don't think we'd ever imagine anything like this. And also now you're thinking the length of time, you know, when it happened with the vaccines, and I don't want to get you too much into it. You're thinking there's a light at the end of the tunnel. But now it seems that light's closing again and again and again and again. And, you know, okay, World Cup qualifying is obviously vital for the teams, and it's going to be on Fox, you know, coming through in Qatar, and everybody's looking forward to it. But if it can stop domestic leagues and stop things happening, then safety comes into first and foremost for the players and their family and whoever they have in contact. But it's just devastating then for the game, for the players. It's World Cup qualification for everybody. But, you know, as I said, we have to listen to the scientists and the facts. And if they're advising people not to go, then we have to do that. You know, it was only the other week I was lucky enough to go and see my mum for over 2 years. So that was tough for me trying to do that. But obviously, World Cup qualification is going to be hard for these South American countries and, you know, players that, you know, travel around the world to go and represent their country. They're proud to do that. I was lucky enough to do that myself as a player, so I know how much it means to people. But we're dealing with something that we never knew existed and was going to go on. So we just keep our fingers crossed that we do get through this, because it's been devastating for everybody.
Yeah, I'm in total agreement with you. I was just thinking about it from the competitive side. Yeah. And if this occurs throughout all of World Cup qualifying, it could really affect the status of teams getting there. And again, it's secondary to everybody's health and safety. The Premier League has this protection and rule changes now. Now they're reluctant to issue yellow cards. They're deciding to change now so that they can improve and let the games flow a little bit more. I almost find this a bit comical, because every year there's some edict that comes down. So we institute VAR, which is going to definitely slow the game down. We use it too heavily in wrong situations, but now we're going to let the game flow. And already Jurgen Klopp has spoken out. How about some thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's, again, VAR, and I've done the Bundesliga and MLS. Let's give MLS a lot of credit, because they was one of the first major leagues to have it going, and with the referees. And it's, again, going down to the people that are actually working the VAR machines and looking at it going forward. The Premier League was a laughingstock globally of how they handled it. The referees didn't know what they was doing. There was people standing in the middle of the field for 8 or 9 minutes trying to find out a decision. Then we see the Euros, and it was magnificent with the coaches and the referees and the people using their technology. And it was phenomenal. You know, the game flowed. There was entertaining games. It was brilliant. The Euros were brilliant. That was the benchmark. Then we come into the Premier League, and, you know, the game is based on, which makes the league so exciting, physical contact. The English Premier League is not always the most technically gifted league in the world, tactically gifted league, but it's the most physically demanding and mentally demanding league in the world, as well as all these top superstars that play in it. So you have to keep that physical side to the game involved. Now, for Klopp to come round, and particularly Ollie as well, that played in an area where you could tackle, where you could be physical, complaining that it's like a rugby game, that's laughable. I mean, the fact of having VAR and going full circle to let it go and to be more effective and more physical, that's another laughable stage. But for them to come out and say that it's like rugby, and particularly, as I said, the two coaches that have been in an era where you could be physical, we are having players, you know, that are looked at different angles. The game is based on a physical contact, about trying to score goals, and it's about winning games. And some teams have not got the technical ability of a Liverpool or a Man City. So sometimes my old team, Wimbledon, we have to be physical to try and win games and intimidate. That's the nature of the business you're in. It's like being, you know, in other sports, you know, the NBA, you've seen it there where players are flopping and lying. You want to take that out of the game. You know, it's a competitive, physical game. And you have to deal with that. Listen, we see a horrendous tackle yesterday with Leicester, with Brest, that's a red card. There's no doubt we can, we don't say that. But shoulder to shoulder, competing for the ball, challenging for the ball, is all part of the Premier League, of what it was first built on, of them great teams that you touched on there with the Arsenals, the Manchester United and the entertainers. We could all play, but we could all look after ourselves. And that's what the Premier League has built this monster into now. So I think it's laughable, particularly them two that come out.
Is it a little elitist from those two guys since they're at Liverpool and Manchester United? I mean, you got to say it's a bit elitist.
Yeah, and then you look at also as well that the players like, ask Jordan Henderson, Klopp, go and ask Henderson and James Milner if they think the Premier League is too physical. Go and ask Michael Carrick, go and ask like Michael Carrick or Rashford, who's been brought up in the system, does he feel that the Premier League is too physical? It is, you know, like you've said, it is laughable, particularly from them too. I'm sure Henderson and Milner are probably laughing at Klopp saying, are you for real? Because he'd be the first one. If they was playing City, the first thing Klopp would be saying, make sure the first tackle we get into, make sure we make him uncomfortable, make sure we play at our tempo, make sure we put our foot in, make sure we put... And now he's saying, well, that's too much. It's not like rugby. Yeah. He's obviously never played rugby because real men play rugby. Real men play rugby and the others play soccer.
Warren, as always, thank you so much. Great insight. We appreciate it. We'll do it again in the near future. In the meantime, you take care of yourself. Thank you so much for coming on the program.
Pleasure, my friend. Take care.
All right. That's Warren Barton. That does it for tonight here on Soccer Matters. You get the podcast of the show at ESPN 975. You remember John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm, our presenting sponsors. You can hit me up on Twitter and Instagram, Glenn Davis Soccer. Until next week, for producer Andrew Carlson, I'm Glenn Davis. Remember, soccer matters. That does it for tonight.
Fun. Sports. ESPN 97.5.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.